series like this and a message like what you see in your, you know, the title for the outline today, it usually either brings a sense of excitement, like, oh, this is going to be good, or else it's like a dagger, you know, oh, I'm going to have to endure this. And that usually says a whole lot about whether you're in a relationship or not. And let me just say, I'm glad every one of you are here today, including the young people in particular, because what we're going to talk about today is really getting a healthy perspective on love and on romance. And I think we'll all agree, you can't find that on TV. And you can't hardly find it in a movie. Because what we get in television and movies are such a twisted perspective on these things. I mean, you know what the Hollywood version of love and romance are. Romance is kissing her before you take her clothes off. Or maybe taking her to dinner before you take her to apartment to bed her down. Right? I mean, isn't that the Hollywood version of things? And what we want to do is reclaim what God intended for us. Healthy relationships. Learning how to love each other well. And so I'm really glad that you're here. Whether you're single or married, dating or looking or hurting. And you know, maybe you're at that point, your heart's been stomped on and you're swearing off love forevermore. I'm glad you're here. Because we all need to learn how to love well and do relationships well. And the truth of the matter is, if you've determined you're not going to love anybody but Jesus for the rest of your life, that's fine. You can apply every principle we're going to talk about today to your love relationship with Jesus. So we're going to dive in today to a message that is all about igniting the fires of romance in a relationship. And I'll start with a quote from Minyan McLaughlin, who said this, and this is not a marriage series per se, though it certainly will apply to folks who are in a marriage. But he said this about marriage, that a successful marriage requires falling in love many times, always with the same person. All the folks who've been married for very long know the reality of this. I start with that point because it is a huge part of understanding healthy relationships. I counsel with people and have counseled with people for a lot of years. And one of the things that you discover when you're talking with people in a counseling setting about love and about relationships is we tend to feel as if we're sort of on the passive end of love. That love is this thing sort of like the wind. You can't see it. You can't control it. And sometimes you're lucky enough that it gets in your sails and it lifts you up and it moves you along. And it sounds like it would make for a great song. But you're, you know, completely at the mercy of this other force that acts on you. And oh my goodness, what would happen if the wind stopped blowing in my sails? What would happen if I no longer felt the way that I feel? Can I just go ahead and clear that up for anybody who's in doubt? It's going to happen. You aren't going to feel like you feel now. You don't feel now like you did a year ago, do you? You don't continue to have the same feeling. If you are red hot in love, good for you. You won't always be. That's the nature of love, excitement, and romance. The good news is, you aren't just on the passive end of receiving the wind of love blowing in your sails. But love is the romantic part of love is a feeling that's going to come and go. And you have a tremendous amount of control, the vast majority of control, over just how much a sense of romantic love and excitement is a part of your life and your relationship. People live afraid of, what if I fall out of love? What if I don't continue to feel the same way? Well, we're going to talk today about what you do to reignite the fires of love, because if you're going to have a healthy relationship, if you're going to ever have a healthy long-term relationship with a man or woman, you're going to have to learn to do this thing that we just read about. You're going to have to learn how to fall in love again and again with the same person. And you can, and it's not that complicated, but it does take some effort. And we're going to talk about five specific things that you can do to make that happen again and again. But first, I want to point something out to you, and that is how relationships normally are going to work and what you have to work against. I've often said that in relationships, it's as if there is relational gravity that's always working against us. One of these, you know, weird little childhood dreams that I've always had, it happens to me in my dreams. I dream at night at times that I can fly. They are the coolest dreams in the world. I hate waking up from those dreams because it's just so cool to be able to soar. Well, romance is the equivalent. It's the relational equivalent of learning to fly. It's like, you know, you can have friendships and family relationships that are good and that are life-giving. But man, when you're in a romantic relationship, all those others, life is good, but your feet are on the ground. And in romance, you leave the ground and soar, don't you? I mean, romantic love is the relational equivalent of finally learning to fly. But you have to understand that just as in the physical universe, there is this unseen force that's working against us in terms of flying. It's called gravity, and it's always pulling us down. In a romantic relationship, there is an unseen force that affects everyone. There is a relational gravity that's always seeking to pull you down. You want to just soar in the clouds. Don't you remember what it was like when you first fell in love? Man, you could fly up there with the 747s, couldn't you? It was just so sweet. Everything she said, everything he did, it was so right. You were just soaring. But with the passing of time, it got harder and harder to keep your altitude, and you began to descend, didn't you? And it may not have been very long before you found your feet bumping against the ground again because gravity had set in. I want to just remind you of sort of the five phases that gravity will cause a relationship to go through. And you will recognize these if you've been in a long-term relationship. All the married people certainly will recognize these. It starts with romance, with the soaring time and the excitement and the mystery and intrigue. And over time, all of this stuff that seems so new and fresh and just everything's like it's unexpected and new, but that begins to turn into routine. Well, everything he did used to just seem so new, but I'm noticing there's a pattern to how he does that now. And so what was just so romantic now feels more routine. And if you let that just continue as it is, a routine will turn into a rut. Ever been there before? Don't raise your hands. Some of you are seated next to the person that you love. The truth is, every person who's been married or in a long-term relationship, you've been to the point that it's like, well, it used to be exciting and good, and now we're stuck. We're stuck in a rut. Now, if you stay in that place for a lengthy period of time, there is a thing that's going to develop, and you can't resist it. It will happen. Resentment will begin to seep into your thinking and into your heart. Resentment over the fact that he doesn't treat you the way that he used to, that she doesn't honor you, that she doesn't go out of her way to make you feel special, that there's just no effort, that there's no sense of pouring one life into another. For lots of reasons, you just begin to resent that this was not the life that you wanted. This was not the relationship that you said yes to. And given enough time, if something isn't done to correct this, the place that this will ultimately land is regret. Regret is that point where you either bail out of the relationship or you live bitter and hollow because it just didn't work out. Love wasn't everything that it was made up to be. And you live at a bad place, regretting that you ever gave your heart to him, that you ever committed your life to her. Or maybe regret is expressed in the form of just saying, that's it, we're done. We're breaking off the relationship, or we're getting a divorce, or we're calling off the marriage. We're just done. And then, unfortunately, oftentimes regret will linger for months and years over what could have been and now is not. Any of you recognize, married folks, any of you recognize what I'm talking about? Anybody recognize that road? The truth of the matter is, every relationship struggles with the tension of being pulled in that direction and wanting to not go there. Now, in truth, a healthy relationship is going to involve the first two. A healthy romantic relationship, it will involve both romance and routine. I mean, a normal healthy life involves routine, doesn't it? It's pretty chaotic if there is no routine. Romance mixed into routine is what keeps the routine from becoming a rut. It's what keeps it fun and interesting. But how do you keep it from just turning into a rut, resentment, and regret? Well, five things that I want to share with you from Scripture that help us to keep from having that happen. And I would tell you that the analogy in my mind that I'm going to be using through this message today is that romance is like the part of your house that has a fireplace. If you have fireplaces in your homes, we've got one at our house. And through the cooler months of the year, the little sitting room that the fireplace is in is the absolute best part of our house. It is my most favorite part of the house because Jackie's hotter blooded than I am, and it's always cold in our house. There is one place that is warm, and it is in front of the fireplace. So I could live in that little part of the house because it's the nice, cozy, good-feeling part. Well, when you think about the whole of your life and of all your relationships, the romantic relationship and the romantic part of that relationship, it is the fireplace of your life. And I've just got to tell you, while I love that we've got gas logs, and you can just reach over there and turn the knob, and man, it is scorching hot in minutes. There are no gas logs in relationships. None whatsoever. I wish there were. They don't have to be tended. There's no ashes to be carried out. No wood to be brought in. I want to tell you, in everybody's romantic relationships, you've got a natural fireplace. You're going to have to constantly bring wood. You're going to have to constantly tend this thing. It is the nature of relationships. And when we think about the five principles for igniting the fires of romance, it starts with an understanding that romance requires planning and effort. I grew up in a home where my parents came up with the brilliant idea when I was a young person about to become a teenager and through my teenage years, that it would make so much more sense. We had a modern house, save so much money and be such a good thing for all these reasons, that we should stop using our central heat and should rely only on a wood-burning stove. We didn't even own a wood-burning stove, so they shopped for the biggest wood-burning stove that they could find in the catalogs. Got that. I mean, this thing is a monstrosity. Bought that, had it installed, and for years then, they heated our house with a wood-burning stove. I started to say they heated our entire house, but that would not be true. In theory, they heated our entire house. My bedroom was at the far end of the house. In the winter, I would wake up every morning with a sore throat because no heat made it to that end of the house. They heated the middle of the house with that wood-burning stove, and I learned a lot about the difference between central heat and using a fire to heat your house. And some of what I learned is it requires constant attention. Now, there's a real upside to it because there's a part of the house, no matter how cold it is outside, you can come into that and, man, it feels so good. There is a place that you can go and feel immediately warm and feel good. Romance works that way. You know, everybody else can and nagging at you or whatever. Isn't it nice to have a romantic relationship that you go to and, boy, it just warms you up. It just feels good to be near this person. Romance is like that. But just like that wood-burning stove, man, there is a side to having a wood-burning stove that just stinks. Let me tell you, if you're thinking about getting one, don't. They're a bad idea. They don't heat evenly. And most importantly, you've got to feed them all the time. We learned this. It doesn't matter how much wood you shove in that thing. It was big. We would load it where you could not get another twig in there at night, and we'd crank those vents down as much as you could without putting out the fire. It didn't matter. You could not make it past 4 or 4:30 in the morning. There would be no more wood in there, and you only had two options. You either got up in the night to tend the fire, or you woke up in the morning, and you were starting from scratch, and it was so cold in the house. So every night in the night, somebody would have to get up and tend the fire. Every afternoon at sundown, my older brother and I, we always kidded that our names were Get Wood and Good Load. Because my mom would always say, boys, go get wood and get a good load. So it's like, get wood, good load, let's go. You know, we'd go haul in wood, we'd fill the firebox and stack it up by the stove so that through the night the fire could be tended. I share that analogy because it is a good picture of romance. Romance feels so warm and good, but you have to understand, it does not have a life of its own that will last. It constantly has to be fed. It constantly has to be stoked. I was curious to read, we're going to talk about romance, and it's like, well, everybody knows what romance is, but I thought, I wonder really how universal our understanding of romance is. I'm going to look in the dictionary just to see how many different definitions there are. And I was curious to find that when you look up romance in the dictionary, you know, it can be a verb or a noun. The definition for the verb form, the first definition was this. It's the part we expect to see. It means to court, to woo, or to try to arouse the interest of another. We all know about that, don't we? It's when we're trying to up everything with another person. You know, we're going to make up. We're going to fluff up. We're going to suck it up. We're going to lift it up. We're going to pump it up. We're going to get everything up and right and looking good because we're trying to impress somebody else, aren't we? You know what that's like. We got to look good and smell good. We got to win the heart of another. And we work really hard to do that. It's interesting when I looked on at the next definition, the noun form of romance, it said an intense and happy but short-lived affair. I thought, isn't that interesting? That even Webster immediately refers to it as a short-lived thing. And at first I thought, well, that's kind of pessimistic, isn't it? That romance is going to be short-lived. But I realized there's a good point to be made in that. Romance is always short-lived, and it has to be reignited again and again and again. You've been in a long-term relationship, you know this. Yesterday was Valentine's Day. Hopefully, some of you got really creative in how to pursue romance. Let me ask you this. How many points is that going to be good for next weekend? Not many. Because that's the nature of romance. It's kind of like putting wood in the stove. It's going to be consumed, and you're going to need more again very soon. The noun version of this, the next definition said this, a spirit or inclination for adventure, excitement, or mystery. Those three words are probably worth writing down somewhere on your outline. When we talk about romance, think about these three words. Adventure, excitement, and mystery. Okay, that doesn't sound a lot like going to the Sizzler for the 100th time, does it? I mean, at some point, how much mystery is there in going to Burger King after church? You know, how much excitement, how much adventure? Those words put the challenge back in romance, don't they? When you start thinking in terms of excitement, adventure, mystery. Oh, now we're starting to think in terms of having to work at this thing. These are good reminders of why the two greatest enemies of romance are busyness and laziness. But why are those the two great enemies? Because if you get too busy with work and children and hobbies and all of those things that you can't put some really concerted effort and thought into this, you will not have a hot relationship. You will not have a strong sense of romance, excitement, adventure in that relationship. The same is true of the person who's lazy. And, you know, if we're honest, there aren't two people in the room who think of themselves as lazy. Lazy people do not think of themselves as lazy, right? I mean, even when we're being lazy, we think we've got a good reason and we wouldn't call ourselves lazy. There are a lot of relational lazy people, and part of the reason I know this is because I've counseled with enough folks over the years to know. Most people who come to see me because their relationship isn't what it needs to be, a big part of what's going on is relational laziness. We stop doing the things that it takes to have a great relationship. Solomon said in Proverbs 14:22, those who plan what is good find love and faithfulness. I want you to say that with me. Those who plan what is good find love and faithfulness. There's some planning involved. Spontaneity is way overrated. Would you agree with that? Ladies, if you're hung up on spontaneity, please get over it. It looks great in a Nicholas Sparks movie or whatever your thing is. But the truth of the matter is, all that great spontaneous-looking stuff, most of it had to be planned. Most of it took a lot of effort and planning. It takes planning and effort to have a great relationship and to have great romance. I think back to, you know, no further than this past week. As I said, it was Valentine's Day yesterday. Did anybody feel any pressure when Valentine's rolls around? For those who are romantically challenged, it's the scariest holiday of the entire year, isn't it? It's like, oh, the pressure's on. You got to do something good. It's Valentine's Day. Well, I don't know what your Valentine's Day looked like. Jackie and I are newlyweds, so, you know, it comes that much easier when love is new. But, you know, even in a new relationship, I was impressed. We knew that that Valentine's Day was not going to be a good day for us to have any time alone, and so we just said, February 12th is when Valentine's is going to fall this year for us. So Thursday was our Valentine's Day, which, by the way, is a good thing to do. If you look at the calendar and whatever, your anniversary or Valentine's Day or whatever special day doesn't fall on a good day, move it a couple of days. It's okay. We moved it to Thursday, and I knew Jackie was cooking something up. I didn't know what, but she sent me upstairs. Just go upstairs. I've got to do something. So I'm like, just hanging out upstairs. I don't know. I can hear her rustling around. She calls me back down, and she meets me at the bottom of the stairs with a card. It's a sweet, romantic Valentine's card. And I open the card and read it, and it's got good stuff in it. But there's a little strip of paper in there and sort of a poetic verse that's written in it that she has penned. But it's a clue. And it is a clue to where the first Valentine's gift is hidden. And I wasn't really good at solving the clue, so she's having to, like, coach me along the way. I can tell. I mean, if she were sharing the other half of this, she would tell you, I probably drove her crazy, because she'd be like, no, not there. But so, with help, I'm following the clues from one gift to the next. I go to where the first clue is. There's a gift and a second clue. And she winds up taking me about half a dozen different places, and at each one there's some kind of little gift wrapped up in red paper. And it was just... And at each one, by the way, there's another little strip of paper with something written in verse, rhyming, that is the clue for the next place. And the gifts would be anything from, like, she knows my favorite candy bar is a Butterfinger, so she's wrapped a Butterfinger at one of them. There was a movie that we wanted to see at the theater that we missed, so she went out and found the DVD of that and wrapped it. She saw me looking at a book in the bookstore. It's a novel that involves Alabama football, and she knew that I was interested in that, so she... You know, behind my back, and picked that up and bought it. Just a half a dozen different things like that. Wrapped them all with clues to the next thing. And when it was all over, she said, did you just think that was all corny? I'm like, no, that's great, because every little part of that tells me this. You took time and effort to think and to plan, and with every gift and every clue that you had to really think about how to, you know, make that rhyme and work, you were telling me that you loved me. And that means everything. Besides which, Butterfinger's great. So thank you. Now, I didn't do quite that well. My plans looked like more like guys' plans. I did make plans. I went to the florist and asked for a particular kind of flower that I knew that Jackie liked and the color that she wanted, and had an arrangement made, and made plans secretly in advance for us to have a place to go and have massages and be able to, you know, have an afternoon together to read at the bay, and then came back and cooked her dinner, and we had candlelight dinner together. So we each planned. Nothing about that was, almost nothing was spontaneous. It all took some advance planning. The cool thing is, when you plan and work at it, you're going to find love and faithfulness are the result of that. Now, I realize that some would say, yeah, that's easy because y'all are newlyweds. And it is easier when you're newlyweds. But let me just say, don't use that as a cop-out. Hear the words of Jesus as he's chastising the church for how they had forgotten how to love as they did at the first. In Revelation 2, he says, I have this against you. You've let go of the love you had at first. So remember the high point from which you've fallen. Change your hearts and lives and do the things that you did at first. We need to be reminded of what first loves look like. For some who've been in a relationship a long time, or you've been married a long time, you need to rewind and remember how you used to plan and what you used to do that thrilled your spouse, and go back to working at it the way that you once did. So first of all, realize that romance requires planning and effort. Secondly, seek to create a healthy rhythm in your relationship. Long term, this is just so important. Paul in Philippians 2 says this, live together in love as though you had only one mind and one spirit between you. Look to each other's interests, not merely to your own. Now, the great challenge here is time. And I would just remind you, it doesn't matter in one sense how busy you are. We're all given the same amount of resources in this regard. Everybody in the room, you got the same 168 hours as everybody else around you in the past week. The question is just what you did with the time that you had. Now, we're going to talk about some special times that you set aside, but we want to talk right now in terms of the things that you're going to do regularly. This is the healthy part of the routine, and I just want to quickly just map out four of these. First of all, if you're going to do this well, and if you only applied one part of the whole message, this is the part to apply. First of all, take time to talk and pray together daily, every day, to make time. Make sure you have time, at least 15 minutes that's uninterrupted, no kids, no TV, nothing else going on, that you just get to interact with each other. I know of one couple that they call it their porch time. Their decompressed time alone together, that they go out on the porch, comfortable chairs, and just have some time to hear each other's hearts. A guy that used to be my accountability partner, he and his wife called it toe-to-toe time. they told the kids to get lost every day for that 15 minutes when he would first come in from work. You know, I'm going to come in and spend time with you guys, but mom gets the first 15 minutes to just hear each other's hearts. Whatever it takes, create a little space to hear from each other. Thankfully, we live in a time when you're out of town. You can call on a cell phone, you can Skype, you can do whatever you have to create time alone. And somewhere along the way in the course of the day, I just strongly challenge and encourage you, take 5 minutes and pray together. And watch the effect that that has over time. You may have been in a relationship for 40 years and that was not a part of your relationship. Why don't you let that be the one thing above any other that you apply starting today? And you can lay it on me. Hey, the preacher said we ought to try this. Let's try something new. Hey, if you don't continue to add new things to the relationship, I promise you, you'll move from routine to rut and resentment. So help keep the relationship out of the rut. Add something new. This might be the new thing to add. Second piece is this. Plan a date at least weekly. And I used to, when I would talk about this, I used to dump this mainly on the men. And I'm changing my tune in this regard. Ladies, we live in a time when women, you know, want to be treated as equal to men, and they should be. In the vast majority of situations, they certainly should be. You are our equal, and in ways, our superiors in certain respects. So apply it here. You know, guys, we should initiate, but ladies, you can initiate in romance very well. And part of the reason that I'm saying this back to the ladies now is because I've just realized God has built into every one of you a marriage manual, a relationship manual that did not get included in our DNA. Isn't that the truth? God just made you with a better understanding of relationships. Hey, guys, if we'll just suck it up, whenever your relationship feels like it's at a little bit of a shaky place, if you want to see it get to a better place, here's one of the easy outs. Ask your wife, ask your girlfriend what's going on and what she thinks needs to happen for it to be better. Now brace yourself, because the answer may not be easy for you to hear. But she is going to usually be more dialed in to what's really going on than we are. God has given women such a keen sense of this. So ladies, you share at least a portion of the responsibility for planning the creative stuff, planning the dates. Court your spouse at least every week. And don't do the same thing every time. Thirdly, go away together quarterly for just romantic love weekends. I used to say a couple of times a year, and I'm just going to say what really needs to be said. Plan it at least once a quarter. 4 times a year, get away. I don't care what age your kids are. Let somebody else take care of them. And for those, I know, we live in a time when we like worship our kids and we treat them as if they're little gods or something that, you know, are very fragile. Your kids will be so much healthier if they see a mom and dad who love each other and who leave them 4 weekends a year, who come back madly in love with each other, than they would to be around parents who don't get along very well. Amen? Amen. Don't you know that's the truth? So get away. It doesn't have to be expensive. Here's my suggestion. 3 of those times might just be quick weekends away where you don't even travel for it. You just get far enough to be out of your routine. And you just feast on love. Do stuff that's fun, adventurous, mysterious, whatever, for the weekend. But once a year, do more than a weekend. And here's the trick. Get busy planning the next one every time you do one. Have one on the calendar that you're always looking forward to. Get away 4 times a year. And the fourth one's going to sound very different. It is very different from the first 3, but it's equally necessary. Build in time to be apart from each other. Space is a key component of every healthy love relationship. Now, you may struggle to have time together, but for some, you already have a bunch of time together. Or it may be that yes, you work and you're relatively busy, but every free moment you're together, which is sort of the equivalent of being together all the time. What you need is to have a balance so that in your rhythm of life, yes, we have time together every day that we talk. We have time together every week where we do fun things and we just love and romance each other and we get away frequently. But in this deal, every week, there needs to be some time that you're not at work, that each of you is not at work, and you're not together. You need space to have a life. She needs to have relationships with other women. She needs to have evenings that she can go out and just be with a girlfriend or with the girls. And he has to have times that he can go do stuff and be with the guys. Now, don't run too far with that so that you spend more time with girlfriend, with guy friends than you do with each other. But there always needs to be space in that. Young people, you know what this looks like in high school? When folks get in a relationship and you know, whether you say it or not, it's like, well, we won't see them again for the next year or however long they're in this relationship, because it's like, oh, we've just got to be together all the time. They just lock on to each other. Y'all know what that looks like, don't you? Everybody has seen that. That's not healthy. Space is a healthy thing. Needs to be time apart. So that's the second key. The third key is this. Ask the right questions and listen well. Paul Tillich says this. The first duty of love is to listen. There's all kinds of research that says the same thing. That the best and strongest relationship builder that exists is to listen well to each other. I want you to just do a little experiment if you've never done this before. But most of us are going to go to lunch when we get through here today anyway. When you're in a restaurant the next time, pause and just look around the room. Look for the couples in the room. And just take notice of what they're doing. Notice today how many times in restaurants you will see a couple, just man and woman at a table, and they're doing this. They're scanning Facebook and they're texting and they're doing all this stuff with somebody who is not at the table with them. And then notice the people who aren't doing that and who are fully engaged with each other. Notice the ones that even from across the room you can look and tell, oh, they are in love. They're crazy about each other, and you can see it in their eyes. Now, I just have one simple question for you. Whether you're in a relationship now or not, which would you rather be? Would you rather be king of Facebook? Or would you rather be a part of the couple that are madly in love with each other? Here's the difference. Learning how to listen well. Smartphones have made dummies out of us. They have made fools out of us, because we'll take them everywhere, and in moments that could have been rich and life-giving, they become a source of frustration. And a moment that could have been romantic or at least meaningful became, without anybody meaning for it to, it became a cause for resentment over what could have been a romantic, fun meal. We've got to learn how to listen well. And it'll help if we learn to ask some of the right questions, too. James said in James 1:19, my dear brothers and sisters, always be willing to listen and slow to speak. If you're going to listen well, it's going to take more than your ears. You are going to need to, you know, dial in actually physically listening to what they're saying. But the vast majority of communication is not verbal. You're going to have to focus your eyes on the other person. Because a huge portion of communication is facial expression, its volume, its tone, its gestures, its posture, all of these things that tell you so much. Sometimes it's even what is not said. So listening well is listening with your ears, listening with your eyes, and listening with your heart. And guys, for us, part of the listening with the heart, it comes so much easier for women than it does for us, because we're so analytical. It's like we're analyzing the facts. You get through, if you'll stop talking, I'll give you the solution. I mean, sometimes we're just like, wrap this up, because I want to tell you how to fix what you just told me. And that is not what she wants at all. She wants you to hear what she's saying and feel what she's feeling. So as guys, listen with your eyes and ears, listen with your heart. What is she feeling? Ask questions if you have to try and understand better. Where is she really coming from with this? Now, I'm going to ask the folks that are helping me out to get up right now and to go ahead and distribute the inventories that we're going to use today. And y'all feel free to, we need several people to help pass these out. There are two things that I want to put in your hands right now. An inventory of his romantic needs and of her romantic needs. And if you are here by yourself, I want you to have both copies. If you're seated next to the person that you love, then you just each get the appropriate one, his and hers. So, I'm giving you this as a great tool. Please do not waste what I'm giving to you. If you're not in a relationship right now, put this thing in a safe place so that you do not lose it. I'm telling you, I am giving you a gift today, and I just adapted something that Jackie found and passed on to me that is so good that I'm thinking, holy smoke, why didn't somebody show me this 25 years ago? This is a great tool because it asks some of the really right, good, healthy stuff to be asking. Here's what I want you to do with this. I want you to make a commitment to do it this week. Because there's a real good chance that if you don't do it this week, that it'll get set aside and you won't ever get around to it. If you are in a relationship, go ahead and do it this week, and then sit down with your partner and you're going to swap sheets and you're going to take time to talk through this thing. Hey, if you're not in a relationship, still take time to fill it out and hold on to it. Hold on to the copy for the other half that you're going to hopefully have one day. You'll be glad that you did. Has everybody got copies of it? Raise your hand if you don't. Need a few more over here. All right, I'm going to take a moment just to spell out a couple of these. They're still making their way around. Opal, some more needed over here, if you will. All right, here's where you're going to start in the conversation when you've gone through and filled this out. And hey, don't turn this into a term paper. We were real careful to put this on just one page. You can fill this out in under 30 minutes. But just to get you thinking, first question, I would describe romance as, and then you're going to try and answer for your partner. I believe my partner would describe romance as. Now, I'm going to just go ahead and tell you, for some of you, that's going to be a whole lot of fun, just swapping and finding out what your partner says. Right now, the biggest obstacles blocking romance in our relationship are the following. Guys, the women are going to be a great help in that one, in helping us recognize what's standing in the way. And now, here's where it gets really fun. The three most romantic things that my partner has done for me are, especially if you've been in a relationship for a long time, you may be surprised at the things that you felt like were just home runs that don't even make it on the list, and the things that you thought weren't a big deal that really were a very big deal. The reason that the answers end up being very surprising here are because almost never do a man and a woman get married who speak the same love language. In all the years that I've done counseling with people, I've only run into that once or twice, which is really extraordinary. When there are only five love languages, you would think a reasonable percentage of the time that would happen. People who get married do not speak the same love language. That will come out in realizing what's romantic for one another. And here's the thing. We're going to put a positive spin on this. I would like for my partner to do more of these romantic things in the future. See, we said that nicely, didn't we? Instead of saying, that deadbeat never does this. He never brings me flowers. We're not going to say it that way. It's on top of these three wonderful things that I just mentioned, that she's done for me, that he's done for me. Here are three more things that I think would just be a blast. And then we've given a specific list. Now, the lists are slightly different, but some things to just spell out on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being, that doesn't do it for me at all. 5 being, oh, that gets me fired up. To just map out the things that do and don't excite you. I just want to tell you, it blew my mind when Jackie and I sat down and went over our list together, because we realized really quickly, holy cow, the things that are her 5s are my 1s, and vice versa. I mean, it was just about that bad. We are so different. Here is a huge key in a healthy relationship: learning to speak the love language of the person that you love. I mean, and for those of you who aren't familiar with that book, you don't have to read the whole book. It's such a simple concept. For some, your primary love language is just quality time spent together. And for others, it's words of affirmation, or it's gifts, or acts of service, or physical touch. When you don't naturally speak the same love language, it takes discipline and thought and effort to constantly give what the other person needs. The guy whose love language is gifts, who's always buying stuff for his wife and thinking, boy, she's just got to be loving this. And the wife over here, whose love language is quality time or words of affirmation, and her husband never voices how he feels, but he's all the time got something with a bow on top. Boy, they are just missing each other without even realizing it most of the time. Until they are so desperate, they come to the counselor and go, we don't get it. You know, I'm trying. He never tells me that he loves me. This is going to help you to recognize the language that your mate speaks. And oh, hey, there's this bonus stuff on here just to help you out. Clothing sizes. When you go to buy gifts, so that you're not just roaming around going, I don't know, she's about this big. Something like, you know, so that we've got that nailed down. And all of this list of favorites, the things that the really careful romantic already knows, well, we're helping out those who aren't just careful in making observations. All of the favorites there. When you finish with this, I want to encourage you, put it in a safe place. Reference that again and again. Be reminded, what is it that she says is romantic? What are some of the things that he said that he would love for us to experience together? This is just an example of asking the right kinds of questions. And then, hey, part of listening well is don't just swap the sheets. Swap the sheets and one item at a time, talk through them. For some of you, that's going to be natural and fun. And for some of you, it's going to be really, really awkward because you're not real verbal about stuff. Or for some who are just sort of hung up on a movie version of romance, it's like, this isn't how it's supposed to happen. He's just supposed to know me. He's supposed to just intuitively just feel what I need and just give it to me. Get over it. Please get over it. We need the help. Ladies, we don't read you that well. So write it down. Guys, don't waste that opportunity. You going to do that? Oh, three of you are. Good luck, all three of you. Somebody needs to find a number four. You going to do that this week? All right, get on with it. Listen well. Here's one more final tip about that, about asking questions and listening well. After you've done a date, after you've done a romantic weekend or a getaway, frequently ask this question. Hey, if we could do that over again, what would you do differently? You get what we're doing there? We're still being a student of our mate. And what do they love? What excites them? It's focusing on a positive future while still being willing to evaluate what we did. Because, hey, the truth be told, sometimes we're just going to swing for the fences and just whiff, aren't we? You ever done that before? Guys, you ever just planned a great night, a great getaway, and it just did not go at all the way that you thought that it would? It was going to have such positive effect, and it didn't do that. Instead of just having to be, you know, bashed for that, ask with a positive look toward the future. How could we, if we did that again, how could we do that differently next time? Because you're going to constantly be a student of what your spouse needs. I mean, the goal here is seek to become the world's greatest expert on your spouse. And that's not a hard job. That's a fun job. In doing that, realize you're trying to home in on a moving target. You won't just get this list spelled out now and 10 years from now, you're good to go. Because you're changing and your spouse is changing. And so you're always going to want to be learning what excites them now. What their answers to these kinds of questions now will be different in 5 or 10 years. So always learning, always growing. Number four, spend time with relationally healthy people. Real simple point here. Solomon said in Proverbs 13:20, spend time with the wise and you'll become wise, but the friend of fools will suffer. My friend Scott, he loves to talk about this verse in terms of, you know, the phones now that came out with them a couple of years ago, the phones that you can bump and they'll immediately transfer pictures and stuff from one phone to the next just by bumping them together. He just points out how in relationships that kind of thing happens. Even though you don't intend for it to, the people that you bump into and hang out with, there's a transfer that takes place without you even recognizing it. And it's what Solomon's talking about. You know, you hang out with wise people and there's going to be a bump effect. Some of their wisdom is going to spill over onto you. As you listen to them talk, you just soak it up. I got to be with one of those friends this week. He's one of the wisest people that I know. Unfortunately, he lives in Houston, so we only get to bump face-to-face 3 or 4 times a year. He called me, said he was in town. Could we meet for lunch? And every time we bump into each other, I just pick up new wisdom. Some of his passion for the Lord and for ministry, it just spills into me just in a matter of a couple of hours. There is a bump effect that takes place for the positive and for the negative. And when it comes to relationships, the same is true. You have people in your life who are in relationships and they are toxic, and others who are healthy. You know what the toxic ones look like. They don't like their mate. They don't like their boyfriend or girlfriend. They like saying they're in a relationship, but they're all the time cutting and biting and negative and critical and sarcastic. And they're just all the time making digs at one another's expenses. And it just feels kind of yucky being around them, doesn't it? Because they're toxic people. And so here's the principle. Try and spend as little time as you can with them. Unfortunately, some of your extended family is probably made up of toxic people. That's what makes Christmas and Thanksgiving so difficult. So you don't get to choose who you're related to. See them at Christmas and Thanksgiving, but limit how much time you're with toxic people. Be intentional about targeting people that are healthy, life-giving people. They love Jesus and they love each other. And when you bump up against them, good stuff rubs off on you. You know what I'm talking about? It's the people that when you get around them and you see how in love they are and you just hear about the things that they're up to, you think, oh, we need to try that. We ought to go there. We ought to do that. I bet that was great. It spills over on you. You will become more loving when you hang out with people who are loving. Fifth and final principle is this. Make daily deposits in your spouse's love bank. Sometimes we're frustrated because we're trying to make withdrawals when there's no money in the bank. You don't have to say anything in response, but have you ever felt that way? You ever felt like, I need some loving back? And you try and do the things to prime the pump and to get some loving back, and there's no loving coming. Sometimes the reason there's no loving coming is because there is no money in the bank. And it was up to you to make the deposits. You don't get to take anything out in the long run when you don't put anything in. So if you want a healthy give and take relationship, you make frequent deposits in your mate's love bank. With your boyfriend or girlfriend, with your fiance, with your spouse. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 9:9, you love your wife, so enjoy life with her. He goes on to say in Song of Solomon, which, by the way, is so intriguing to realize that God put an erotic love poem in the Bible. Go home and ponder that one. My God felt that it was that important. He loves the idea of romance and intimacy. And in that, he says, the lover speaking, his words are kisses, his kisses words. Everything about him delights me, thrills me through and through. That's my lover. That's my man. Truth be told, no matter where you've been, no matter what your experience is, I bet every person in this room, every person listening online under the sound of my voice, at some level wishes for this. You wish to have a relationship with somebody who feels that way about you. Man, their words are like kisses. Their kisses are like words. Everything about that person thrills me through and through. That's a relationship that's soaring. How in the world do you get there? Part of it is you make deposits in this relationship every single day with the little things. The little things that say, I'm crazy about you. I value you. I respect you. I want to honor you. And I'll just give you several examples. We do this so many different ways. But little daily things that you can do through the day, through the week. Just some quick examples. One, cook for each other. And by the way, it's a great thing for men and women to both know how to cook something. Don't always just take each other to dinner. Cooking a meal that you know your spouse loves says a great deal. That's a deposit in the bank. Hey, massage, that's a great way to make a deposit in the bank. Jackie and I have an agreement that if one of us gives any kind of massage, you know, rub the shoulders, rub the feet. By the way, feet are a great thing to massage because there's about a million nerve endings right there in the feet. Just to take time and talk while you rub your loved one's feet or shoulders. Our deal is you never give it back in that time. Whoever initiates, the other person just gets to be on the receiving end of that for that time. This is not a payback kind of thing. Just making a deposit through touch. Love notes. They don't have to be long or expressive. It may be one sentence. Just leave them in surprising places. Everybody loves that. Flowers. Guys, if you're married, why ever let a month go by that you don't at least a couple of times a month bring flowers home or send flowers to your wife? Compliments. One of the easiest ways to make deposits. Tell your mate what you love about them, what they do that you admire. Just compliment how they look. They got dressed for church this morning. Did you tell them how nice they looked? Those things count for a lot. If you like coffee, if your mate likes coffee, you know, getting up, making coffee for them, bringing it to them. Jackie and I both are not big coffee people, but we both have learned what to get at the coffee place that doesn't have coffee in it that we like. So when either of us is going by, to pick that up and bring it to the other one means a lot. The common courtesies. It's amazing how much common courtesy has become uncommon in our world today. Saying please and thank you. Just doing the little things. Holding the door. That may seem so old school. Women, how many of you appreciate it when a man holds the door for you? Let me see your hands. I see a lot of hands. Just the little things. Like holding the door. Oh, here's one I was not trained in properly, so I am going back to school to learn to do. Putting the toilet seat down. Amen. Who knew? I'm learning. I'm in school right now. Toilet seat training. Little things that say, you matter to me. Waiting to be seated at the table. And absolutely waiting until your mate is there and present before you would eat. Well, that's the ultimate in rudeness. If your mate cooked you a meal, to sit down and begin eating before they're seated. Don't sit until she's seated. Don't eat until you've asked the blessing and she's joining you. Candy, walks together, playing together, competition together. I think we are two of the most competitive people in the room. We turn everything into a competition, but we have fun with that. Just making fun of the little stuff. Clearing the table. Oh, you want to make a deposit? Guys, and it works in reverse too. But if your wife has cooked a meal, don't dare let her do the dishes. If the kids aren't doing the dishes, make sure one of two things is happening. Either the kids are clearing the table, which is a really good thing for them to learn by, because don't expect them to grow up and serve if they're not having to serve in the home. But make sure that either you or the kids are clearing the table. That's a deposit in her bank. I mean, just little stuff. If you're going to get something to drink for yourself, stopping to ask, what could I bring you? Or just, if you know what they like, just if you're getting it for you, get it for him, get it for her as well. The list could just go on and on. These little deposits make all the difference in telling the other person all day long, every day, I love you, I value you, I'm so glad that God gave you to me. God made us for love relationships. He made us first and foremost for a love relationship with Himself. He wants us to learn to love Him well. He wants us to learn to love each other well. But it takes some thought, some effort, and intentionality. And even if love has grown cold and stale and you're in a rut, God wants to breathe life into that for you if you'll cooperate and let Him. Would you join me as we pray? Father, I ask You to breathe into us life, joy, and passion where there have been hurts and disappointments. And I pray, God, that You would, in the relationships represented in this room and of those listening online, that You would stir in us a desire that is accompanied by commitment and effort to work toward healthy, strong, loving relationships. And God, where there's a desire for relationships that don't exist, we pray that You would satisfy that desire in Your timing. We trust You for that. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Every year, we stop and we witness students from all over taking just a piece of their summer to unite, to be part of something special. It's why every aspect of this camp, every session, every small group discussion, every worship set, every book in the store is inspired by their voice. It's why we never stop thinking about the guy or girl counting on this week to finally open up, or the friend you finally worked up the courage to invite, all because you knew that something this big had to be shared. So thank you, because you're the ones who make this camp special. Maybe because you see something much bigger than a camp. You see a movement much bigger than just your church. Because sure, we may look different, talk different, be from different states. But when we strip all that away and just look at who we really are and what we really need, we start to realize we're not that different at all. The parties, the pranks, the sun in your eyes and sand in your hair, it's dancing with your best friends and the new friends you just made 10 minutes ago. It's hands up, singing from the top of your lungs with no voice left to a God who loves us just as we are. Everyone accepted, everyone free from yesterday's worries. That's what this place is. That is big stuff.